Lady Liberty waving us all through.
What's at stake is nothing less than the American dream.
The American dream is looking a bit tired and poor these days, but what do the huddled masses think? The immigrant experience through the lens of this recession, a dream distorted?
Excuse me, but Lady Liberty needs glasses, and so does Mrs. Justice by her side.
What's at stake is nothing less than the American dream.
The American dream, nearsighted, farsighted. Your call on The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning. It's Wednesday, March 11th. I'm John Hockenberry. I'm in Boston today working with our partners up at WGBH. I'll be over at MIT later. You know what a techie I am. Good morning, Farai.
How are you doing? You're going to have some Toscanini's ice cream or anything like that?
Maybe.
All right, bring some back in your suitcase. I am Farai Chidea and for Adora Udoji, who's taking some time to be with her new baby. Now, yesterday the president had his say on the future of education. Today we'll bring you students, parents, and experts. All this and much more ahead, but first the headlines.
The Treasury Secretary says Team Obama is almost done with the plan to deal with all the bad assets weighing down banks and the larger financial economy. Here's Tim Geithner on Charlie Rose.
We start with just a deep mess, and it is our obligation to clean it up and to fix it and make sure, working with the Congress, we are very aggressive and very forceful.
Treasury Secretary Geithner says they'll reveal the bank rescue plan in a couple of weeks. Congress has passed a bill to ease travel restrictions for Americans going to Cuba. Cigar smokers shouldn't get too excited yet, though. The move doesn't completely lift the trade or travel restrictions. It just makes it a little easier. No deal for Bernard Madoff. He was in court yesterday for what was supposed to be a routine hearing, but it turned into a news event. Once it was revealed, he will plead guilty without a deal with prosecutors, facing up to 150 years in prison.
And several people are dead across South Alabama. Investigators say a gunman killed at least 9 people in different locations before killing himself. An Asian market surged today. Japan's key index leaped nearly 5%. Most other Asian markets also closed sharply higher.
Surge all around the world. The Asian market surge follows yesterday's huge rally on Wall Street. It had the best day in more than 3 months. The Dow gained nearly 6%. The S&P rose almost 6.5%. The Dow starts trading at 69.26, and the S&P will open over 700, folks. Begins trading at 719. We're talking all this week about the new American dream in light of all the changes the country's going through. And today we want to hear specifically from immigrants. What does the American dream mean to you? Give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses. That's what Lady Liberty beckons to all those who come to the U.S. What did you dream of before you came to the United States? Did the dream pan out? Tell us your thoughts at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org. We've been hearing from you all week. Great dreams. I've been having great dreams. How about you, Farai?
Doing good.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
The Takeaway is supported by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at knightfoundation.org. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation to enhance public understanding of science and technology in the modern world.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
And I am Farai Chidea, in for Adora Udoji, who is on leave taking care of her new daughter. Yesterday, President Barack Obama said it's time to change American education.
The fourth part of America's education strategy, promoting innovation and excellence in America's schools. One of the places where much of that innovation occurs is in our most effective charter schools. And these are public schools founded by parents, teachers, and civic or community organizations with broad leeway to innovate.
So we are going to find out more about charter schools, what they are, whether they're the best places for innovation. With us today is Seth Andrew, the founder of the Democracy Prep Charter School in Harlem. Also, Pedro Noguera, sociology professor and head of the Metropolitan Center for Urban Education at New York University. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thanks for having us.
So, Seth, just to make things clear, we did say this already, charter schools are public schools, more freedom to set up their own schedules and agenda. So what's yours? What's Democracy Prep?
Well, we're a public charter school in Central Harlem focused on preparing every student for success in the college of their choice and a life of active citizenship. Our students are incredibly hardworking. Our parents are incredibly hardworking. And I think the president's speech demonstrated pretty clearly what public charter schools are all about. They're about accountability and autonomy so that we can innovate for excellence.
Break it down a little bit more for me, because I got the chance to meet a couple of your students. We're going to have them on later in the show. Young minds being reshaped, 7th and 8th grade. But what do they do all day? What makes it different than, you know, their schedule, their focus, different?
You know, when you ask Daniel what it makes it different, he said everything. And the truth is that we have the ability to start our school day earlier. We start at 7:45. Our kids are there until 5:30 in the afternoon. They're in school on Saturdays, going on field trips. This weekend, they're heading to three different colleges. And what they're able to do in that extra time is get ready for college with no excuses and no exceptions. Every one of our kids is on that path. We can have really rigorous academics. We use data in sophisticated ways to give our teachers the feedback they need so they can tailor their instruction to specific kids and not to a general textbook. We are able to have more time on task and prepare for not only state assessments, which are important, of course, but a really rigorous theater program, a really rigorous art program, a debate program that's beating private schools across the city.
Back in some of the things that have been stripped from a lot of public schools.
Exactly. And if you have more time, that's not a trade-off we have to make. We can do both.
Professor Noguera, when you think about the president's speech and the items that he ticked off that he found inspiring or necessary, how important are charter schools? Are they the answer, an answer, not the answer?
Well, charter schools at best are part of the answer, but they certainly aren't the whole answer. The vast majority of kids in this country attend public schools, and unlike charter schools, public schools are required to admit all students, including students with learning disabilities and children who don't speak English. So I think the president needs to be aware of the fact that although charter schools, in many cases, though not all, are really innovative and creative, they do not serve most of America's children. And we need a strategy that's going to address the real challenges facing our public schools, which have to take on children with much greater needs often.
Well, and Dr. Noguera and I agree completely that it's part of the answer. It's not the whole answer. Though what is amazing about schools like Democracy Prep is that actually we're serving a disproportionately challenging population. In fact, in New York City, we serve more students with free and reduced lunch than compared to New York State or New York City. We serve more students of color. At Democracy Prep, we actually serve more students with special needs and more students with English language learner needs than does the district. So it's really a function of what charter we're talking about, and I would agree that not all charters are excellent. There's by no means the panacea. However, what becoming a charter has allowed us to do is to serve more kids. The saddest part about being a charter school today is that we have 1,000 kids applying this year for 100 seats. We're going to have 2,500 kids on our waiting list, desperate to get a quality education to fulfill their American dream, and they can't get in because we don't have space to let them grow.
Well, Professor Noguera, let's talk a little bit about the strategy of chartering as a way of meeting the needs of some of the populations that you ticked off down there. Certainly, one of the reasons that charter schools are distinctive is that they aren't all schools. They're a select group of schools that have specific sorts of goals that Seth has eloquently outlined there. But I'm wondering if it's possible to use the charter model to get at some of the questions of cognitive challenges, learning challenges for kids with all kinds of other sorts of difficulties. Can you create a charter school that's targeted to individuals who are underserved in the traditional public school system without getting into the sort of segregation sort of nightmare?
Well, you can. You can design charters to serve specific populations, and there are charters like Democracy Prep that are serving high-need kids. But the simple fact is, I mean, it would be like trying to design, trying to solve the healthcare crisis by creating a small number of specialized clinics. The problem is much bigger than that, because most Americans won't go to specialized clinics. And that's the same thing with public education. You can't solve the problems facing public education through a small number of charter schools. we have to ask ourselves, given that we've had charter schools for a while, many of which have been quite innovative, why haven't they led to improvement in public schools now? And I would say it's because schools don't learn from each other in many cases. There's not a lot of conversation among educators in charters as well as in public schools. And because in many cases, the charter schools are serving a different population. That may not be the case with Democracy Prep, but it is the case in many other parts of the country.
Well, let me ask a question of both of you. And in essence, there were some for-profit charter school chains, and then there's also nonprofit charter schools. Professor, let me start with you. What do we know about the state of play with charter school effectiveness? Because I've seen some studies that say that many charter schools don't test better than other public schools. There's certainly ones like, I believe, the KIPP Academies have a very good reputation. How would you rate the movement and how it's doing overall?
It's a mixed bag. New York State does hold charter schools accountable, and there are cases where charters have been taken away. But there are several other states, Florida, Texas, where the charters are not accountable, don't have to take the same kinds of exams that kids in the public schools do, and you have no way of knowing how well they're performing. And I would say that if we're going to use charters as a model, we need to make sure that we are judging them by a similar criteria that we judge public schools. And that's not the case now across the country.
Seth, when you think about it, it sounds like New York is getting a bit of praise there from Professor Nogueira. But when you think about the intriguing thing that he said about schools learning from each other, how much do you communicate, not with higher-ups in the school hierarchy, but with schools that are non-charter schools right here in the city?
Well, for us, that's a great question because we actually started off sharing a building with the traditional public school. We're going to be doing it again next year, and we form relationships with those principals. So Principal Wright at PS197 is an amazing principal, and we work together pretty closely to try and build our program together, so it's sharing very actively. But at Democracy Prep, as an example, we have an open-door policy. That means that literally you can walk in. We'd welcome your listeners to come by in Harlem to visit us because we want to share. We want this to be a race to the top. We want to give all the best practices that are getting our kids to be the highest-performing school in Central Harlem to share that with others.
Although, Seth, there's also experiences in New York where the charter school occupies a floor of a pre-existing public school, and there's a certain amount of jealousy and competition going on, and that it's not the sort of free flow of information. Pedro whipped my head around with his statement that schools don't learn from each other in practice. Can the federal government facilitate this learning school to school to create a kind of experience, a sort of a broad national support group for best practices in education?
They can, and in some ways they already do. There's a number of schools that the Department of Ed has recognized as high-performing schools. A great school in Boston that's been around for a long time is Roxbury Prep. They've been doing this work in the middle school level. We learned from them. They published reports on them 10 years ago, which I helped use as design to build Democracy Prep in Harlem. So we're learning a lot from best practices of other charter schools and then replicating them not only in public charter schools but in traditional schools as well.
I'm going to ask you, Professor, to give us a quick rundown of one other item that was in the president's address. He talked about lifelong learning. He talked about any number of issues. Give me one other example of something that popped for you during his speech.
Well, I think it's really admirable for the president to focus on education at a time when the economy is in so much trouble. A number of people would say, until you get the economy stabilized, we shouldn't think about anything else. And I think he's right. We have to see reforming education, reforming the schools as being linked to the recovery because we have large parts of this country that are not participating in the economy right now. The only way they will is if they get a better education. I'm concerned, though, about the emphasis on performance pay. I don't see a system that they've devised to ensure that's going to be fair. I think the bigger problem we have is how do we attract highly qualified teachers with proven effectiveness into high-need schools.
All right.
We
that was Professor.
That right now.
Thanks, Professor Professor Pedro Nogueira, Metropolitan Center for Urban Education in New York City, and Seth Andrew, founder of Democracy Prep Charter School in Harlem.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.